Ian. Welcome to Creator Coco. This podcast helps you become a better creator by helping you learn from what other creators have already figured out. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can send us a tweet at Creator Coco. That's creator and then C-O-C-O-A. In this episode, I talk about the movies and shows I've watched recently, including The Founder, The Revenant, Bling Empire, Is It Cake, and Formula One, Drive to Survive. I hope you learn something that helps you become a better creator. So I'm going to start by talking about The Founder, a movie I've watched recently. I had watched this before. I just watched it again recently, and it has some inspirational aspects, but let me just talk about the summary. So it's the true story of how Ray Kroc, a salesman from Illinois, met Mark and Dick McDonald, who were running a burger operation in 1950s Southern California. Kroc was impressed by the brothers' speedy system of making the food and saw franchise potential. He maneuvered himself into a position to be able to pull the company from the brothers and create a billion-dollar empire. It's a rags-to-riches story, and I feel like a lot of people inherently relate to that, and you're always rooting for the underdog. But what if the underdog is an asshole? Yeah, so what happened here was it's a story of someone who was down on their luck. He was a salesman. And then he comes across this opportunity of this restaurant called McDonald's. And then he sees this opportunity. He's like, whoa, if you franchise this, this can turn into something huge. It's just that the brothers were a bit more conservative. And so they were not as, blowing things up as much as he would have wanted. So he decided to take matters into his own hands and ultimately ended up stealing the company from the brothers. So it's bittersweet because the sweet part is just seeing the story of someone succeeding. It's another example of you can succeed at any age or with minimal resources. There's a possibility, basically, if you have enough drive and tenacity. And the word in this movie, I think, was persistence. But at the same time, I don't feel like the original McDonald's brothers necessarily needed to be screwed over for him to have his way. I feel like McDonald's still could have existed and still have the founders succeed in some way. So Ray Kroc was a huge dick, but the movie is interesting. You should watch it basically to learn about business, learn about the idea of franchising, which is a very important idea in business, and things like that. So that's The Founder. I also recently rewatched The Revenant. Here's what The Revenant is about. In the 1820s, a frontiersman, Hugh Glass, sets out on a path of vengeance against those who left him for dead after a bear mauling. This movie, first of all, is beautiful. It's shot in a unique way, and you can tell from the very beginning, the very first scene, that you're in for a visual treat. It looks amazing. It's very immersive. The characters and the world building and the way everything is set up, it's very, very believable. The main protagonist of the movie is Leonardo DiCaprio, playing a character called Hugh Glass, who gets bear mauled. So there is a very epic bear mauling scene. Sorry to spoil for you, but this was released in 2015. So if you haven't watched it yet, I'm sorry. So it has some very epic scenes, and it's a story of this guy struggling through the worst odds to try and succeed somehow. He gets bear mauled, then he gets left by his compatriots, I guess, and then he's being chased by some guys. He is trying to duck them. Things are happening left and right. It's very beautiful, and it's a simple revenge tale where he's trying to avenge the death of his son. It's very epic, very nice story. It's a bit, is it a slow burn? I don't think it's a slow burn, like Blade Runner 2049. It has exciting scenes, and it has beautiful, unique stuff. So if you want to watch that, if you haven't experienced The Revenant, it's definitely a unique kind of a thing. So up next is going to be Bling Empire. And this is the summary. Follow LA's wildly wealthy Asian and Asian American fun seekers as they go all out with fabulous parties, glamour, and drama in this reality series. So yeah, you're just scrolling along on Netflix and you see something called Bling Empire popping up. You're like, let me check it out. And it turns out it's amazing. There's this idea of reality shows being fake and being empty and being all made up. And the reality is that people love that stuff. Although here, I don't know, like it seems like a lot of them are just being genuine and being genuinely themselves, and you end up liking them for who they are and their personalities as much as there's all this glamour and stuff surrounding them. You just end up liking the characters themselves, and you end up following their story arcs, and you end up being interested in what they're up to. And you also see some pretty crazy, honest, authentic moments from these people, and you can connect with them. And that's what I liked most about Bling Empire. It's you kind of connect to the characters, and they're being genuinely themselves, only that they're super rich. Cool. So up next, is it cake? Skilled cake artists create mouth-watering replicas of handbags, sewing machines, and more in a mind-bending baking contest inspired by a popular meme. Is it cake? So it sounds ridiculous, and it sounds like is this something I would like to watch? But then you pop in one episode and you realize the premise is quite interesting, and the way they have executed the premise, it's quite entertaining in terms of how it's been set up, like the formula of the show itself. And that's the other thing you realize about shows is that they have the formula, and the question is this formula interesting enough for you to watch throughout the whole season? And for this one, they do have a formula that can work, which is that they have judges who are presented with these cake creations that look like normal, ordinary objects, like a cake that looks like a I don't know, like a cup, and then you're supposed to decide between it looks like a bag, let's say, or a shoe, and then you are supposed to decide, is this a real shoe or is this cake? And then if you can make the determination, the game proceeds, and the person who has to make the determination is they have these judges. My only flaw, okay, about that particular judging session is that the cakes, the way they're displayed, so it's a game about visual kind of it's a game about details, basically being able to tell the difference, the subtle differences between what would be on a cake and what the real thing would look like. And I feel like it's important to have good lighting for that judging, to be fair. But from my experience, how they show these cakes to the judges, the lighting is so messed up. They have all different shades of colors shining on the cakes, and it looks a bit dark. And the judges are standing a bit far, which I guess is part of the thing. If you stand really close to the cake, it reduces the ability of the judge from being able to tell. But yeah, so the lighting could improve, but then also now, and here's the biggest thing. So I give this 4 out of 10, although I really liked it. But I could not watch this past a certain number of episodes, and the reason is the host. Okay, they got the most cringy and awkward host you will ever see. He's ew, and he's very, 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 very cringe. He destroys the whole show. Pretty much with his obnoxious personality, with his comments, with his jokes. Some people like that kind of thing, and some people think it's hilarious. But I know I'm not alone in hating the host of this show, because he does such a bad job, and he basically distracts away from the point of the show, which is these talented artists who are making these beautiful cake creations. And so I could not watch past a certain number of episodes, and I stopped watching. But the maybe you might be, you know, maybe you might like the host more than me. Cool. Cool. Okay, so the final one is called Formula One Drive to Survive. Let me read the summary. Drivers, managers, and team owners live life in the fast lane, both on and off the track, during one cutthroat season of Formula One racing. And before this, I did not really know much about Formula One racing, so I just entered into this just out of curiosity. Someone recommended this to me, and I was like, cool, let me check it out. Formula One Drive to Survive has single-handedly increased the market of people who are interested in Formula One. There is a before and after this show in Formula One history because it's that popular. And it has had that huge of an impact to the bottom line of the Formula One industry, thanks to Netflix, basically, being able to tell us the stories of these drivers and their managers and their bosses and their investors and the politics and rivalries and emotional disputes between the different racers and the drivers and how it's all connected. Because before, when you're just looking at the cars racing, it doesn't really, it's just like, oh, look at those are cars racing. It's like, yeah, cool, there's cars. But once you start learning about the different races, who they are, what their histories are, how one race is connected to the other, how the different histories between the different teams that are competing and how they want to compete with each other. And also you learn about the rules, you learn about the pit stops and what happens there. And then you learn that right now in Formula One racing, there is one dominant team, which is called Mercedes. And this team is led by Lewis Hamilton, who is probably one of the, he's the greatest, basically, Formula One racer of this generation. He's basically the Michael Jordan of F1 at the moment, and it's amazing. He's so cool. I'm a huge fan of Hamilton because he's so dominant, and you can't not be a fan of the guy who's dominant. But then there's also other teams. There is also Mercedes. There's also Ferrari. Oh, I already mentioned Mercedes. There's Ferrari. There's Red Bull. There is Renault. There is Haas. There's other teams. And then you get to learn all the different histories behind them. And they've been there for so long. And then one thing eventually clicks on me is that this is a sport for the ultra wealthy. Only the ultra wealthy perform in this sport. And I guess for the most part, only the ultra wealthy actually end up participating in this, or very well connected people, because it seems that you need to be very, very rich, and the chances of you making it if you're from a broke background is very difficult. So because the whole thing is very, very expensive. It happens on several, in 1 year they move all across the world. Imagine the expense and the lavishness. They move all across the world to compete in 1 year. They race, they destroy these cars all the time. One thing, when I started getting into it, I started realizing that all the time, whenever you're seeing F1 cars, or whenever you're watching Formula One, probably 80% of the screen is usually covered in logos. And at first it was distracting. I was like, what the hell? I can't even like focus on what's happening because I'm busy looking at these logos. And I guess that's the whole point. That's intentional. And the explanation for that made sense to me. Initially, I was like, are these people just this greedy that I can't even watch Formula One without paying for it by looking at all these logos? And the answer is part of the reason why they're able to, it's a very expensive sport. And I realized that the advertising that they do is actually an inextricable part of the business of F1. So it's not something on top, it's part of F1. Because without those logos, they would not be able to fund some of the things that they do. And they need a lot of sponsors, basically, in order to be able to, in order to crash all these cars, to hire these drivers, to hire the team, to become better, basically, than the other team. You need a lot of sponsors. And to get these sponsors, you have to sell space on your car, so that when the race is televised or distributed, your logo goes everywhere with that. And that's how F1 is funded. And that's why a lot of these teams are called, for example, you have a Red Bull. Okay, they have longer names, but as you can hear, they're all brand names. So Mercedes is there to advertise Mercedes. Renault is there to advertise Renault. Haas is there to advertise Haas. Red Bull is there to advertise Red Bull. Ferrari is there to advertise Ferrari, and all of that stuff. And apart from the cars themselves, there's also personalities of the racers who are quite interesting when you start learning about their background. They all have their own kind of they have a type. There's a type for Formula One racer, and it's people who don't like losing. They get very emotional when they lose. You need to be very brave because these cars are moving very fast, and if you get into a crash, you're going to be getting into that crash at a very high speed, and the chances of you dying are not, it's not zero. And then you have to have the balls. You have to have more balls than the next guy. If you're going to be overtaken and you need to prevent that guy from overtaking you, or you need to overtake someone, you need to make a balls. You need to be a guy who can make ballsy moves and push yourself. Because when you realize you have to, sometimes you have to really like step on the gas, to get points for your team, basically. And yeah, you learn all these small rules about F1. I learned even more about how pit stops work. And you can also go watch some pit stop fails on YouTube. I was like, they get these pit stops so perfectly. Are there situations where people actually messed up the pit stops? And yeah, there are. So you just go check them out and you'll see them.